No, where's the sound? Welcome, everybody. This is BMP Weekly. I got it right. Episode 74. It is 9th of March, 2020. Anyway, and this time we do have a visitor again because we want to have the visitors in every single week. Before we go there, let me do a quick intro. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint engineering team. And with me as a co-host every single week, typically at least, is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mostegas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today, our wonderful guest is Fabian Williams, cloud golf club producer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Fabian, who are you? Can you do a quick intro? What is your background and how do we know you?
Sure.
Oh, I got to explain. How do we know you?
We know each other. Well, let's not go there how we know each other because that might be not true. For
Let's just say Waldek and I are brothers now. My name is Fabian Williams, and I am a director for the Intelligent Process Automation, which is IPA, but not the beer IPA, practice here for a company called Witham in North America in the DC metro area. I'm a Microsoft MVP in now Visual Studio Development Technologies, but I came all the way from SharePoint to Office Server and Services to Office Development, and now I've ended up here. And I came from the background of me is I was an MCSE, then an MCDBA, then an MCSD, and I've just loved the developer path.
MCA. Software.
I know. And I just stuck out the developer path. And in terms of my background, it's everything I do has a data element to it. So started off with BCS, obvious, as you know, then went to workflows. Now I'm straddling the automation space with machine learning and artificial intelligence. So that's it for me.
Yeah.
And I'm here based in the USA.
Yeah, based in the USA. Absolutely. Absolutely. But last week you were in Finland. Let's get back on that one briefly. What was your, briefly explain what were you doing in Finland and what was the impressions on that?
So. Sure, absolutely. So I was fortunate enough to be invited to speak at Microsoft Tech Days in Finland. It was done in Helsinki, and I cannot pronounce the name of the place it was. It starts with an M, and it's in Pasila.
Messukeskos.
There we go. And
that one.
Yeah.
My session was on Azure Functions. It was great. It was my first time doing that event. I had a very packed room, and the fortunate thing is that as much as when I speak in Europe and people are usually more reserved, I did have a very active audience. They asked questions and it was very dynamic in nature. It was a great event and I was happy to be there.
Yeah. And coming back on actually, the Finland is pretty cool that you were able to actually see how Finland is in springtime. It's not the best possible time of the year yet. I think the May, June, July, much better. But anyway, that's a separate discussion. Now, coming back on the Azure Functions and the data-driven thinking, what you mentioned. So you mentioned the Azure Functions. Why would anybody, let's say, in the SharePoint world or in the Teams development world should be interested on Azure Functions? What's the big fuss about Azure Functions?
Really? Oh, wow. I think you're just sending me a softball right there, but I'll take it.
All right. Okay. All the way in 1992...
Yeah. So developers by nature are very lazy people, right? So, we can always
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about? If a developer has to create two things, they're going to make it very simple for the second time around. And I think Azure Function gives us a great leap there because, when you're developing previously, you have so much infrastructure that you have to set up. You have to bring down libraries. You have to pull in an IDE. Functions just gets you there in a heartbeat. One of the things I mentioned in my session is that if you wanted to do a POC, not something you're going to put in production, you can literally go to a browser and actually start coding and boom, you have a test case there. Is it going to work or is it not going to work? So in 5 minutes, you can actually prove out your point. But in the context of SharePoint, I guess the way that I would look at it is that everything in Azure Function has a URI endpoint. So you can just consider it basically a webhook of sorts in the simplest form where you have input information and you have output information. And in that sense, because I spend a lot of my time in just manipulating data, then all I want to do is the ingress of information, manipulate it, and then the output of information. And here's the key. There's a moment in time when I knew that I wasn't going to do SharePoint in the traditional sense anymore. More. And that moment came when they started to introduce JavaScript inside, and I said, "Oh, we're not doing this. We're not doing this." So I was able to.
So here, news,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can also do JavaScript server side. Does that also mean that I'm like, oh, I cannot do that anymore too?
No, but
no JS.
that came after the fact, right?
Right.
Sure. So I when I saw the writing on the wall coming in, I said, I'm going to bail here. But to your point, and to be fair, it's gotten better. And, you know, even with TypeScript now, it's even better, right? So if I came in at a type of TypeScript, I said, yeah, okay, I'll keep doing SharePoint. But that wasn't there in the beginning. Before, it was Angular, and it went, the framework changed along the way. So
it
evolved and it got better. But the point is that I can do C# still in the cloud, and that was the biggest selling point for me. So, yeah, so that's that, if I had to sell Azure Functions, that's how I would sell it.
Yeah. And so with regards to that, like if I look at the Microsoft Cloud, there are so many places where you can store the data. Like you can have SharePoint list, you can have Azure databases, like NoSQL, SQL databases, table storage and whatnot. You can have Cosmos. You can also store data in CDS.
Yeah.
In dynamic space, you can store data as schema extensions on graph.
Yep.
So what? How do you measure? Like, when do you choose for which one? Which do you see? Do you use most a lot? Which are have most caveats? Kind of like, where do you with which data repo do you interact the most?
Well, if you're going to say interact the most, it definitely would be in Cosmos DB NoSQL database, even though that's somewhat of an expensive proposition. But the extensibility of a NoSQL platform so you're somewhat schemaless allows you to build for the future. And every time I build something, I always build with the plan of this is going to be extensible and this is something that I'm not going to build you in a box, basically. So that's where I play the most. Now, qualifying that with the fact that most of my customers are still SharePoint people, I still do write back to SharePoint, but we can definitely talk about that. But the SharePoint experience in Azure Functions is not the best, right? Yeah, I mean, it's not there yet, I should say. It's still something that's being upvoted in what's the thing called again? User Voice, because there's no functionality yet there for .NET Core. So the way that you have to work it is a little bit different. But I make it happen, and you can still build your code futuristic, knowing that there's some point that you may have to refactor later, which another plug for Azure Functions is that everything is modular. So you can build solution-oriented architecture. So I'm building a lot of this stuff futuristic, but this one piece later on, I know I have to change, but it's going to be an easy change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think with regards to that, I think that would be, so I think what you mentioned was the lack of SDK for interacting with lists, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, alternatively, you could use the Microsoft Graph SDK because lists are exposed on that.
Yeah. But
from the data repo point of view, you would be able today to like really interact with lists in an easy way through Graph.
You could.
But I think the thing that I would love to see the most in Functions would be the bindings to lists.
Yeah. Native
to
bindings.
Pass in the list. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Native bindings
to
lists.
I have a list, write in, write out. Done.
Yeah, because the way that you do that now with blob storage, the way that you do that now with
tables,
views and tables, it's easy. You can do it in like 4 or 5 lines of code. Exactly.
The best part, you don't need to worry about auth.
You don't, which is so beautiful, right? Yeah, because before, if you remember the old days, you remember the MSAL days?
They are still there very much. Like if you want to interact with a list from a function, you need to do auth because these things aren't anonymous for a reason.
Yeah. And my trick around that, which I've done when I'm doing SharePoint work using Azure Functions is actually use certificate auth because it gets me around that. So basically I'm able to do an app, rather than delegated, I'm doing application security model, and then I just basically use a certificate, and that gets me out of the way. So
easy. Yes and no, right? It's the, let's say, get out of jail card, but it also gives you like your code, right? Permissions for every single site in the whole tenant. So it's a very high level permission.
It is. It's almost like doing impersonation back in the day, run as.
Yeah.
But to your point, you got to remember, I am not doing any – in my world, I'm always just wrangling data, right? So there's no user context there. So it's okay. It's almost like running a service account, right? So I work with service accounts, and I treat the certificate as a service account. But I get your point. Your point is completely –
Like you should be, right?
Yeah.
Because your service account has the high-level permissions, and people need to trust on that.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, actually, on that one, because I know where Waldeck is coming from as well, it's really the security concerns. Yes, Netherlands. But now, how do you – are you ever having a debate or customer discussions related on, hey, you need to get this level high permissions in Azure AD or using the resources? Is it a challenge for customers? Are they like, hey, it's just the normal business to go through and create the Azure AD application and grant permissions and just move ahead?
Yeah, the experience has gotten better. The one thing I should say as well is that every solution that I create for people, I also do knowledge sharing and a handoff to them. So it's easy for me to teach that philosophy and for people to accept it. It could be better. Yes, there's always room for improvement. But I'm a firm believer in Azure AD as the authentication store. So, you know, how will we have to get there? We just have to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Much better than actually creating an account in SharePoint and then granting permissions for an account.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's more of a hack.
So in a way, like that is neat because you can really isolate that account to just have access to that one particular list, as opposed to the whole environment. But you cannot rotate credentials, no MFA for that, which is like, really? So it's like there is no ideal answer for that currently, if you ask me.
In security, there's always the argument, how secure do you want to be, right?
Exactly. Is it like single lock, two locks? Is it a lock on a chain? Like, how far do you go, right?
But it's delicate balance, right? Do you you always sacrifice functionality and accessibility for security. What is that balance where you want to ensure that the user can get to do what they actually want to do, and at the same time giving them the enough security in the context of how the application is being used? I don't want to create Fort Knox if all we're doing is just exchanging candy.
True.
Yes, but then if you have this one app that does that today just it does exactly this, but it can be exploited, and then you have the access to everything because it's allowed to do everything. So it's like, you know,
But that's where, and you know, I know we're going to jump off topic just a little bit, but that's where ML and AI comes in, right? So to the extent that you log everything that's going on and you have an AI behind it, as something becomes an anomaly, right? So, you know, you have like cluster and then you can do anomaly detection, then boom, you come back in. So I don't just give them something and say, oh, well, here we are, you're done. There's always good login, and Azure Insights have, you know, those nice real-time login. So if you funnel that into something that's being monitored, then even if something does happen, and then you can really cut it off.
Sentinel or something.
Like what Tobias is doing, something like that, right?
Yeah. Sorry, what?
Tobias Zimmergren has a lot of blog.
Exactly. And I think another interesting aspect might be, like, recently we've heard that Team announced the resource scope permissions. So your AD app can have access to a single team or channel.
Yeah.
Yep.
Imagine that thing in SharePoint. Not to all sides. This side,
right,
or this side.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's what we used to have. Technically, that's what we used to have with an old OAuth-based authentication model, which still works, which wasn't based on ACS, but it was based on ACS, but the pre-ACS, whatever it is.
New model. Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that, like, reintroduce that in AAD, and I think we would be in way better shape than we are now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, the way we are right now is that there's a lot of best of breeds that we've took a long time to get to, but now we're doing things in a new modern technology, and we've somewhat moved away from those best of breeds. If we can just refactor that into our current way of doing business, you know, we'll be, you know, far better for it. Let's not forget all of the hard work that we've done before, you know, just, you know, in escape of just where we are now in these newer technologies.
Sure. So just one thing, I think, before we go into the articles, have you ever called your function run with elevated privileges?
No, never. Gotta remember, like I said before, I was a systems engineer before I was a database administrator, before I was a developer. So I have that mindset of an engineer or something. So yeah, I'm not that developer that's going to say, you know what, if I do this here, it will work everywhere. So let's do it everywhere.
Yeah. Let's call it. Exactly. Let's call my function. It'll be my way to elevate privileges for everything.
Yeah. No, sir.
Before we actually, just one more before we go to the articles, and then let's get back on the discussion. But what would be if you are, let's say, a classic SharePoint developer still, and there's still plenty of those out there, and they're looking into going to the Azure side of the house, and they're looking into keeping that C# way of doing development. What would be the things what you would recommend people to have a look on? So what are the top, let's say, 3 to 5 things where people should be?
Well, yeah, Waldeck summarized it there. It certainly would be Azure Functions. I'm not going to move away from it because that's actually my life, right? The fact I've moved into functions and I've just adapted functions for everything. But the qualifier is that you're going to have to be working currently in the 1.0, which is the .NET standard framework or runtime. But here's the key thing, and something I mentioned in my session as well. If you have code that you were doing on premises, and you know that code is not garbage anymore because you can bring your DLLs into Azure Functions, because all Azure Functions is just a web job. It's, you know, you can still use Kudu, pull in your DLL, reference it at the very top, and start running it. And then you can also have an import file to do all your authentication as well. So from a portability standpoint, if you are a traditional SharePoint dev, you can still go to the cloud and you can still use code that you've built in there. But you know, always have an eye towards the future. You know, the fact that there's now the graph, as you mentioned before, Waldeck, the graph bindings that are there, start to think about creative ways of doing that. And eventually when we get to a .NET Core for SharePoint, that's, you know, for CSOM, that's where we want to be as well. But there's no reason why you can't start here now doing the way that I'm talking about, by bringing in your libraries and bringing in your NuGet packages and start to work at your traditional view. So that would be my advice. It's all about Azure Functions.
Okay. What about the data storage?
Data
sets. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to say. All right. So from a data
storage. No.
So I've done examples and it's somewhat demoware, but you can expand on that demoware where, you know, you can write back into SharePoint. I think I was having this conversation with Christina a couple nights ago. My days are getting blurred now because of the back and forth. But I was saying that I treat SharePoint as a data repository, but SharePoint basically is an ECM, right, an electronic content management platform. So in the end, yes, it is a data repository. So it's just front-ended by, you know, the web parts and views and so on and so forth. But I write back into that when it's necessary, and I use CDS. You know, the CDS is definitely somewhere where you want to be as well, because then you're exposed to, you know, Power Automate. You're exposed to Power Apps. You're exposed to, you know, just about everything. So, you know, keep it. You know, you don't need to change a lot of what you're doing, you know, to use Azure Functions. And, you know, I just encourage people to do that, because it's more what you've done in essence is that you've now exposed data to a URI endpoint. And as long as you write your contracts properly, you can use it in a mobile app. You can use it inside your SharePoint app. You can use it in everywhere. And the point I'm trying to get to, and I'll just shut up, is that Microsoft Teams in and of itself is basically doing that. Microsoft Teams backs itself on, you know, O365 groups and also SharePoint lists and libraries. That's the same thing I'm doing with Azure Functions, except that I'm doing it without the interface of Microsoft Teams.
Yep, makes perfect sense. All now, right. Waldeck, you had something still.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be a long thing, so maybe better to go into the articles first, and if we have time towards the end, then we will reiterate.
Let's do that. So let me share my screen and tell me when you get it.
I get it.
So first of all, right now, so starting from last week in Redmond, the Redmond is moving to the remote working mode as well. And there's this global awareness of these things. And so you're seeing more and more also investments from Microsoft on helping people to actually adapt to this new world of working and the new world of actually behaving. Now, this one is pretty cool. Coordinate Crisis Communications, Microsoft Teams and Power Platform. So this is a real application which is available for people to take advantage and install to their tenants and then actually have a ready-to-designed experience in the Microsoft Teams as an application. And also, I think it will actually work through the process of adding that to the left navigation completely. So it's actually then pointed on the left as well. And there we go. And you could actually associate that to be all the time visible, or potentially using the pin or not in the solution. So using the personal application mode. So pretty cool setup, actually, and demonstrates really the power of the and flexibility of the platform as well. Now, this one is pretty interesting. 4 tips on working from home. This is a theme now that Redmond went to work from home mode as well. The 4 different tips from Caruana related on that one. Pretty okay. Just awesome tips, absolutely. Make the most out of meetings, start recording. One thing what I would always recommend, and even before we went to this, everybody works from a remote mode, because what if there's a family emergency? You missed the meeting. And you want to actually see what happened during the meeting. It doesn't cost you anything to do the recording. It's just, it is a setting. There should be actually a setting to do that by default in every single meeting. That would be brilliant. Just make sure that it's getting recorded and that's it.
So, yeah, I think the input there is that certain organizations, and you know, I live in the DC metro area, you have to get permissions to record. So the fact that it's not on by default, is more protectionist for an area like where I live.
Yeah. Makes sense. But for example, for Microsoft in general meetings, That would be a great setting to be all the time. Now, the video is a really big thing because, well, as an example, I haven't met Waldeck in real life, and I don't know for how long, but we're basically chatting every single time.
We see each other every day. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it really feels that we are on the same room with the video. So it has a massive impact. Sure, there's a slightly different way of kind of having the discussions rather than face-to-face, but hey, it is almost the real deal. So. Yeah. Plus the fact that I will have my own space as a Finn, that's an important thing. So.
Yeah, I know. I learned that over the last week in Finland.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, like these are the things you get to understand. Like, if you're used to work a lot in an office with a local team, like that difference doesn't really hit you. But like for us, we are in different countries, like including you. We are even geographies, right? So. Like, imagine how hard would it be for three of us to find a time slot to go to a single office to meet. Whereas now, we just start a call, we just plan available slot, the first one that we have in calendar, and it's on, and it's done. And the more you collaborate with others across the world, the more obvious it becomes, like, how convenient this is and how much empowering it works, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
You get you get logistics for free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Exactly. And the additional notes or track notes and items share frequently used documents, all of them there, and customers a virtual workplace. So that's the pinning is really cool as well. I use that all the time for those things which are relevant for me because I'm like 100 or 200 groups and teams nowadays. So you have 200 inboxes to follow, which is like, yeah, that's not usable. But then pinning the relevant teams to the top is really cool. Now, what else? Office 365 CLI had a new beta version. You want to talk about this one?
Correct. Yeah. So when you work with SPFX, you need to ensure that the version you use, that for that version, you have aligned the right version of Node, NPM, Gulp, and whatnot. So there's a tool chain that you can use, but that needs to be aligned with the version of SPFX you use. Mm-hmm. Depending whether you build, like you work on one particular thing, or if you work on multiple projects for multiple customers on multiple versions, that can quickly become a hassle because you need to switch between them and not only between the versions of SPFX, but also the whole dependency chain.
Yeah.
And that becomes even more complicated when you get project from somebody else. And then you have to, okay, so that is an SPFX 1.8. Wait a minute. So which version of Node and NPM do I need for that? And sometimes you will start getting errors where there is nothing wrong with the code. It's just your environment that isn't aligned with it. So in CLI, we've built a command that you can run. Mm-hmm. And you can run with it within the context of a project. And then it will check. It will answer, is your environment aligned with that version of SPFX used within the project? And then it will check all the things like Node, NPM, Gulp, and so forth and so on, basically giving you a list of checks. And then if it's okay, it will be all green. If not, then it will show you a list of fixes you have to do, like run this command to install the right version of NPM, run or do install this version of Node, and so forth and so on. So basically, we try to simplify that, removing like one, you knowing which version of dependency chain you need for a version of SPFX, and then remembering that for all versions, and then two, checking if you have all of them installed or not.
Right. You know, the interesting thing on that is that, you know, and one of the things we didn't touch on, you know, when we're just chatting is the fact that I did C sharp for a very long time, but now I'm finding myself doing a lot more of Python. What you're discussing here and as we become, as Microsoft become more open source and more expansive to people that are not just standard developers that are using different languages, this is reminiscent of doing something in like Anaconda, where you can create your different environments and then target the exact same thing. So there are tons of other developers that are not part of the Microsoft ecosystem. That this applies to, and this is just a good way of just bringing them in, and then there'll be that familiarity once they get in. They say, "Hey, it's just like how you did it over there." So this is fantastic.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really love that as well. So because it's a classic challenge on the incoming issues that people don't get stuff to work, and this is going to solve that. So really, really cool. Now on other areas, related areas. So this one was big news from last week. So the Yo Teams is moving under the PMP umbrella as well. So we're moving the Teams generator, the BMP organization. Mm-hmm. And also we're going to start now promoting this as part of the messaging and everything else. So really, really cool stuff. So
good news.
Yep, and it's nice to see that people are actually excited on this one. So it's really one. We want to make sure that people are aware of what happens in the Yeoman TO teams. People are aware of the TO teams in first place, and they know how to actually take advantage of that one for their team's development. Really, really cool stuff. So it's now in the PMP organization and generator teams in there as well. Super, super important point, by the way, and it's completely an ad hoc thing. As part of this one, but then we obviously did a lot of important work related on the Parker logo as well. So so it's no longer green like the SharePoint green. It's just the same generic logo there as well, or the team's colors there as well. Anyway, super important stuff. This one is from Yannick. Export Microsoft Graph subscriptions, part 3, handle subscriptions lifetime. So basically making sure that how do you tackle the lifetime of the subscription? You need to renew. I can't remember how often, but you need to renew and make sure that that is happening properly. And it is taking advantage, this example, Azure Functions behind of the scenes. So as an example, how to do stuff. So good stuff from Yannick. This one is from David Romalho. By the way, David, congratulations for being a new MVP.
David, congratulations. Welcome to the family.
He is on the Office App Services side, OAS side of the house. And, well, he's sharing a lot of PowerShell learnings and PowerShell things. And this one's really around, what was it, exporting terms groups, term group with PMP PowerShell. So what do you need to do? How do you do that? And how things work. So really cool stuff as well.
Before you pivot from that, I don't know if you were going to pivot, but one more thing on pimping out Azure Functions. You can do it in Node. You can do it in PowerShell as well as, Python on languages as well. So
and PowerShell Core too.
Exactly. So these are all, good reasons to think when you think about SharePoint and Office 365, still think of Azure Functions because there's many different ways that you can work with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And in the PMP PowerShell case, so obviously this one is using the US web logging, which is the multi-factor authentication model. Mm-hmm. But PMP PowerShell supports certification-based authentication. So you can actually use the same certificate-based authentication against SharePoint Online to get access on things and then operate, which is pretty cool. So, which, by the way, we do have a video last Thursday's community call. Paolo did a live demo on that one, how to make things happen. Well, for you, for people in this call, and Fabian knows this already, but for people who haven't seen it, there's a step-by-step video from Paolo related on how to make that happen.
For people now, in this call, and not for Fabian, who haven't seen it, so it's only me left,
no,
right?
No, Fabian knows. Whatever. No, people in this call know already that it's possible, but anyway. So, whatever. So this one is from Piyush around masking first characters. So this is really cool. Power apps, how do we hide some of the entries, what you're doing? So really cool. So, and these are the things, obviously, in Power Apps. I'm not a specialist in Power Apps, but certainly useful tips, and people need to make these things happen when you're doing a password or a, what was it, credit card number, telephone number.
There's a big thing here in this country about, personal identifiable information. So this is one way to ensure that you can, adhere to those principles.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, moving forward from our Italian friend, the crumpy Italian. No, just kidding, Paolo. You're not crumpy. We just always make fun of you on that one. But this is really cool video as I'm working with content types and fields with PMP.js. So I think this is, this is part 4 or on that series. I think he's doing even more. But that's really on helping people to use the PMP.js because that's actually really, really, really great library. Open source library by the community. So really, really cool. Now, Bob German, also from last week, he released his first set of videos or his video channel, and he has actually quite a lot of old videos, but new videos as well related on Teams, and there's multiple Teams videos now, the latest one being the building your first bot on the Teams with JavaScript or C#, and these are really cool. So 15 minutes and clarification, and Bob is awesome on clarifying how things work. So, and unless I'm completely mistaken, we are using Yo Teams, obviously, on creating the teams. Where was it?
You would expect so, absolutely. No, it's actually Bot Builder Generator. I don't think it is Yo Teams. YoBot Builder. There
are a few different options. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, there is. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Good. Then this one is from Rabia Williams, who's been, she has been really active on the CLI side of the house and also on the SPFX side. React reusable custom hooks in SPFX. Pretty cool. I was just quickly looking into this one. So basic idea is that you can do something like this in your code, get the array, and then with the array return based on the number of people in the array, get the results. So really a new way of, so to say, implementing SPFX implementations in React. So
yeah, very clean too. Look at the code. It's, you know, it's extremely clean to the point, not a lot of fluff, which makes it more performant.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. A few more using nFiles in SharePoint Framework development, really around the environmental variables. So then you're able to do the environmental variables inside of things and installing, well, managing the environments and URLs and whatever other settings you might have between the different target environments. So pretty cool setup as well. This one was from
NXT
Stevens. Yes. And then we have one more technically. Louis Manes. This one is around the calling new presence endpoints in Microsoft Graph API from SPFX. He did actually share this open source sample as well previously already. And the whole point being on the fact that you can now use the graph to figure out the presence of the people, which is insanely cool, actually.
Yep.
So it's one of those things, if you think about even the old SharePoint back in the time when we come from the old background, there was an ActiveX component. ActiveX
for link, right?
It was basically, reading the link status from client side and presenting that on top of the server side HTML. Yes. Now it's actually true connectivity behind of the scenes. So really, really cool.
I can definitely see some examples of me using this with my machine learning AI stuff, because if you can know the presence of people by just calling the graph, you can make better intelligence in terms of how you share and curate information.
Absolutely.
Especially like meeting invites and, you know, and what you push and when you push it behind the scenes, and making sure that people, like you mentioned before, you know, Vesa, you belong to so many different teams. There's like an overload of information. You can have an AI actually figure out what to show you and when.
But also, like, I have a question, whom to ask, who is available now around me who can answer my question.
Exactly. Yep.
Isn't that how the chatbots actually work on the website? So go to the website to the chatbot and then you say, hello.
They're not that, intelligent. They're just kind of like the first one available, dear Vesa, and it always brings it to you.
explains.
So, yeah.
It's a switch statement running behind the scenes.
Good. Just Vesa.
Exactly.
There's only the default entry on that switch. The last one is just a pinpoint. Last week, we also released a set of new media articles related on background. So if you're looking into having a cool... we don't actually have that one right now on my back. But so sharing is caring message within this. And what was your reaction? Looney Tunes style. and a different set of colors. So Stefan Bauer shared this in the GitHub PMP media repository. So if somebody's interested, they are free to get access. So exactly. And that's it. 5 minutes. What do we want to do? What do we want to talk about?
No, Waldeck had a question that he said until the end.
Really short. So I hope that you will be able to answer that within 2 minutes or so. Like, so you mentioned that where folks who go from on-prem to the cloud, they don't need to throw away their code. They can move to functions. But typically, if I would be on-premises, I would build what? ASP.NET Web API. Why not push it as is to web app? Why to split it in functions?
Okay, so functions give you a lot behind the scenes for free. A lot of it is, you can say, let's say authentication. Authentication is there for free. So you get that without building it in for your web API, right? Because your web API is just going to give them the vehicle to get in, but you still need to manage that vehicle in front of it, right? In terms of who can get what.
Not really, because you could do the app service auth basically the same way you would do it on functions. You could do it the same way on the web app.
Right, but
just enable that.
Correct. All right, so that's fair. That's a fair point. So why would you do it that way? All right, so Azure Functions give you a lot more bindings and a lot more triggers to work with. So I don't think you can beat me up on that one.
Basically split the whole thing, yeah, so not exactly. Have a monolith.
Exactly.
That, you know, so I have the web app with 20 million APIs.
Exactly.
No, just like you have this thing, and then you can update them, manage them separately, have independent routes and all that, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that would be a reason for me, at least,
yeah, that's
to do it.
I'm trying to work my way down the top. I'll put that as the reason number one top. And what would I put behind the scenes after that one? No, I think that one's hard to beat. Let me not monkey it up.
Sorry.
That's the reason. And you did say 2 minutes. So I'm going to give you the number one reason is the fact that you have multiple ways in, multiple ways out, and it's turned on by default very simply. So yeah.
And it's not super costly either, right? It really depends what I use behind the scenes
Lord.
As well.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yes, yes. This is a very good point.
You should mention the fact that with Azure Functions, was it the first million? You know,
yeah, if you are on consumption plan, yeah. If you are on, first million runs are for free.
Free. Exactly. And then if you go on the premium plan, then you also get something that's pre-warmed, but still cheaper than an app service plan. But if you need an app service plan, then you basically have the ability to have manageable costs that you know is going to happen, you know, based on what the compute that you choose. So these are just very different ways that are convenient. If you're doing something, you know, personal or something, you know, departmental, then you can try it. And, you know, based on your transactions, you have, you know, marginal costs, but then you have to manage in terms of just the run cycle. But if you're doing something in production, you have the app service plan, and you have something there, and scalability as well. So the fact that if you're doing something here in North America and you want to do it in Europe, it's a flick of a switch with Azure Functions. It's my second one, by the way, Waldeck.
Perfect.
It's a flick of a switch, and I basically now have another resource in another country, in another region, and just like that.
And one thing, we have only 2 minutes because there's a hard stop. You mentioned a few times artificial intelligence, machine learning, and everything like that's related on. And obviously, how do you consume them and use them is dependent on your project and customer objectives. But for the audience of this podcast and video, how hard it is to actually consume those in the Azure function? So is it something which people can easily get started on?
Yeah. I'll give you an example. So when I do my Azure Functions demo, one of the demos is actually taking a picture of a person's business card and then calling the
recognition
API exactly to do an OCR against that. And I take that information and I call the Bing API and I call a bunch of different sentiments. So it's extremely easy. It's no different than the way that you're doing it now traditionally, except it's less code and you get these runs for free, as I mentioned before. And it's very extensible. So
And I think that's a great statement to actually stop the webcast, the weblog and the podcast as well. But thank you, Fabian. Great discussion. We could have actually gone much longer again.
we need a part two that's more centered around just ML and AI.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll follow up on that one after a few months. Definitely. Absolutely. Really, really great to have you here and have a chat as well. Any last words from you, either one or both?
No, well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's always an honor sitting down with you guys. And, you know, thank you for the good work that you guys are doing on the PNP side of defense.
Thank you. But I think that's it. We'll be back in a week. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.